Argonautica by Apollonius Rhodius. Part 4. And when they had passed within the gates and the city, the women of the people surged behind them, delighting in the stranger. But he, with his eyes fixed on the ground, fared straight on till he reached the glorious palace of Hypsipyle. And when he appeared, the maids opened the folding doors, fitted with well-fashioned panels. Here Iphinoe, leading him quickly through a fair porch, set him upon a shining seat opposite her mistress. But Hypsipyle turned her eyes aside, and a blush covered her maiden cheeks. Yet for all her modesty, she addressed him with crafty words. "Stranger, why stay ye so long outside our towers? For the city is not inhabited by the men, but they, as sojourners, plough the wheat-bearing fields of the Thracian mainland. And I will tell out truly all our evil plight, that ye yourselves too may know it well. When my father Thoas reigned over the citizens, then our folk, starting from their homes, used to plunder from their ships the dwellings of the Thracians who live opposite, and they brought back, hither, measureless booty, and maidens too. But the council of the baneful goddess Cypris was working out its accomplishment, who brought upon them soul-destroying infatuation. For they hated their lawful wives, and yielding to their own mad folly, drove them from their homes. And they took to their beds the captives of their spears, cruel ones. Long, in truth, we endured it, if haply again, though late, they might change their purpose. But ever the bitter woe grew, twofold. And the lawful children were being dishonored in their halls, and a bastard race was rising. And thus unmarried maidens, and widowed mothers too, wandered uncared for through the city. No father heeded his daughter ever so little, even though he should see her done to death before his eyes at the hands of an insolent stepdame. Nor did sons, as before, defend their mother against unseemly outrage. Nor did brothers care at heart for their sisters. But in their homes, in the dance, in the assembly and the banquet, all their thought was only for their captive maidens, until some god put desperate courage in our hearts, no more to receive our lords on their return from Thrace within our towers, so that they might either heed the right, or might depart and be gone elsewhither, they and their captives. So they begged of us all the male children that were left in the city, and went back to where even now they dwell on the snowy tilths of Thrace. Do ye, therefore, stay and settle with us, and shouldst thou desire to dwell here, and this finds favor with thee, assuredly thou shalt have the prerogative of my father Thoas. And I deem that thou wilt not scorn our land at all, for it is deep-soiled, beyond all other islands that lie in the Aegean Sea. But come now, return to the ship, and relate my words to thy comrades, and do not stay outside our city. She spoke, glozing over the murder that had been wrought upon the men. And Jason addressed her in answer. Hypsipyle, very dear to our hearts is the help we shall meet with, which thou grantest to us who need thee. And I will return again to the city when I have told everything in order due. But Let the sovereignty of the island be thine. It is not in scorn I yield it up, but grievous trials urge me on." He spoke and touched her right hand, and quickly he turned to go back, and round him the young maids on every side danced in countless numbers in their joy, till he passed through the gates. And then they came to the shore in smooth-running wains, bearing with them many gifts, when now he had related from beginning to end the speech which Hypsipyle had spoken when she summoned them. And the maids readily led the men back to their homes for entertainment. For Cypris stirred in them a sweet desire, for the sake of Hephaestus of the many counsels, in order that Lemnos might again be inhabited by men, and not be ruined. Thereupon Aeson's son started to go to the royal home of Hypsipyle, and the rest went each his way as chance took them, all but Heracles, for he of his own will was left behind by the ship, and a few chosen comrades with him. And straightway the city rejoiced with dances and banquets, being filled with the steam of sacrifice. And above all the immortals, they propitiated with songs and sacrifices the illustrious son of Hera and Cypris herself. And the sailing was ever delayed from one day to another, and long would they have lingered there, had not Heracles, gathering together his comrades apart from the women, thus addressed them with reproachful words: "Wretched men, does the murder of kindred keep us from our native land? Or is it in want of marriage that we have come hither from thence, in scorn of our countrywomen? Does it please us to dwell here and plough the rich soil of Lemnos? No fair renown shall we win by tarrying so long with stranger women, nor will some god seize and give us at our prayer a fleece that moves by itself. Let us then return each to his own. But him leave ye to rest all day long in the embrace of Hypsipyle, until he has peopled Lemnos with men children, and so there come to him great glory." Thus did he chide the band, but no one dared meet his eye or utter a word in answer. But just as they were in the assembly, they made ready their departure in all haste, and the women came running toward them when they knew their intent. And as when bees hum round fair lilies pouring forth from their hive in the rock, and all around the dewy meadow rejoices, and they gather the sweet fruit flitting from one to another, even so the women eagerly poured forth, clustering round the men, with loud lament, and greeted each one with hands and voice, praying the blessed gods to grant him a safe return. And so Hypsipyle too prayed, seizing the hands of Aeson's son, and her tears flowed for the loss of her lover. "Go, and may heaven bring thee back again with thy comrades, unharmed, bearing to the king the golden fleece, even as thou wilt and thy heart desireth. And this island and my father's scepter will be awaiting thee, if on thy return hereafter thou shouldst choose to come hither again. And easily couldst thou gather a countless host of men from other cities. But thou wilt not have this desire. Nor do I myself forebode that so it will be. Still, remember Hypsipyle when thou art far away, and when thou hast returned, and leave me some word of bidding, which I will gladly accomplish, if haply heaven shall grant me to be a mother." And soon Aeson's son, in admiration, thus replied, "Hypsipyle, so may all these things prove propitious by the favor of the blessed gods. But do thou hold a nobler thought of me, since by the grace of Peleus it is enough for me to dwell in my native land. May the gods only release me from my toils. But if it is not my destiny to sail afar and return to the land of Hellas, and if thou shouldst bear a male child, send him, when grown up, to Pelasgian Iolcus, to heal the grief of my father and mother, if so be that he find them still living, in order that, far away from the king, they may be cared for by their own hearth in their home." He spake, and mounted the ship first of all. And so the rest of the chiefs followed, and sitting in order, seized the oars, and Argus loosed for them the hawsers from under the sea-beaten rock. Whereupon they mightily smote the water with their long oars, and in the evening, by the injunctions of Orpheus, they touched at the island of Electra, daughter of Atlas, in order that by gentle initiation they might learn the rites that may not be uttered, and so with greater safety sail over the chilling sea. Of these I will make no further mention, but I bid farewell to the island itself, and the indwelling deities to whom belong those mysteries, which it is not lawful for me to sing. Thence did they row with eagerness over the depths of the Black Sea, having on the one side the land of the Thracians, on the other Imbros on the south. And as the sun was just setting, they reached the foreland of the Chersonesus. There a strong south wind blew for them, and raising the sails to the breeze, they entered the swift stream of the maiden daughter of Athamas. And at dawn the sea to the north was left behind, and at night they were coasting inside the Rhaetian shore, with the land of Ida on their right. And leaving Dardania, they directed their course to Abydus, and after it they sailed past Percote, and the sandy beach of Abarnus, and divine Pityeia. And in that night, as the ship sped on by sail and oar, they passed right through the Hellespont, dark gleaming with eddies. There is a lofty island inside the Propontis, a short distance from the Phrygian mainland with its rich cornfields, sloping to the sea, where an isthmus in front of the mainland is flooded by the waves, so low does it lie. And the isthmus has double shores, and they lie beyond the river Asepus, and the inhabitants round about call the island the Mount of Bears. And insolent and fierce men dwell there, earth-born, a great marvel for the neighbors to behold. For each one has six mighty hands to lift up, two from his sturdy shoulders, and four below, fitting close to his terrible sides. And about the isthmus and the plain, the Doliones had their dwelling, and over them Cyzicus, son of Aeneas, was king, whom Aenete, the daughter of goodly Eusorus, bare. But these men, the earth-born monsters, fearful though they were, in no wise harried them, owing to the protection of Poseidon. For from him had the Doliones first sprung. Thither Argo pressed on, driven by the winds of Thrace, and the fair haven received her as she sped. There they cast away their small anchor stone, by the advice of Tiphys, and left it beneath a fountain, the fountain of Artaeae. And they took another meat for their purpose, a heavy one. But the first, according to the oracle of the Far Darter, the Ionians, sons of Neleus, in after days laid to be a sacred stone, as was right, in the temple of Jasonian Athena. Now the Doliones, and Cyzicus himself, all came together to meet them with friendliness, and when they knew of the quest and their lineage, welcomed them with hospitality, and persuaded them to row further and to fasten their ship's hawsers at the city harbor. Here they built an altar to Ecbasian Apollo and set it up on the beach, and gave heed to sacrifices. And the king, of his own bounty, gave them sweet wine and sheep in their need, for he had heard a report that whenever a godlike band of heroes should come, straightway he should meet it with gentle words, and should have no thought of war. As with Jason, the soft down was just blooming on his chin, nor had it been his lot to rejoice in children. But still in his palace his wife was untouched by the pangs of childbirth. The daughter of Percosian Merops, fair-haired Cleite, whom lately, by priceless gifts, he had brought from her father's home, from the mainland opposite. But even so, he left his chamber and bridal bed, and prepared a banquet among the strangers, casting all fears from his heart. And they questioned one another in turn. Of them would he learn the end of their voyage, and the injunctions of Peleus, while they inquired about the cities of the people round, and all the gulf of the wide Propontis. But further he could not tell them, for all their desire to learn. In the morning they climbed mighty Dindymum, that they might themselves behold the various paths of that sea, and they brought their ship from its former anchorage to the harbor, Cytus, and the path they trod is named the Path of Jason. But the earth-born men on the other side rushed down from the mountains, and with crags below blocked up the mouth of vast Cytus toward the sea, like men lying in wait for a wild beast within. But there Heracles had been left behind with the younger heroes, and he quickly bent his back-springing bow against the monsters, and brought them to earth one after another. And they, in their turn, raised huge ragged rocks and hurled them. For these dread monsters, too, I ween, the goddess Hera, bride of Zeus, had nurtured to be a trial to Heracles. And therewithal came the rest of the martial heroes, returning to meet the foe before they reached the height of outlook, and they fell to the slaughter of the earthborn, receiving them with arrows and spears, until they slew them all as they rushed fiercely to battle. And as, when woodcutters cast in rows upon the beach, long trees just hewn down by their axes, in order that, once sodden with brine, they may receive the strong bolts, so these monsters at the entrance of the foam-fringed harbor lay stretched one after another, some in heaps bending their heads and breasts into the salt waves, with their limbs spread out above on the land. Others again were resting their heads on the sand of the shore, and their feet in the deep water, both alike a prey to birds and fishes at once. But the heroes, when the contest was ended without fear, loosed the ship's hawsers to the breath of the wind, and pressed on through the sea-swell. And the ship sped on under sail all day. But when night came, the rushing wind did not hold steadfast, but contrary blasts caught them and held them back, till they again approached the hospitable Doliones. And they stepped ashore the same night, and the rock is still called the Sacred Rock, round which they threw the ship's hawsers in their haste. Nor did anyone note with care that it was the same island. Nor in the night did the Doliones clearly perceive that the heroes were returning. But they deemed that Pelasgian warmen of the Macrians had landed. Therefore they donned their armor and raised their hands against them, and with clashing of ashen spears and shields they fell on each other, like the swift rush of fire which falls on dry brushwood and rears its crest. And the din of battle, terrible and ruinous, fell upon the people of the Doliones. Nor was the king to escape his fate and return home from battle to his bridal chamber and bed. But Aeson's son leapt upon him as he turned to face him, and smote him in the middle of the breast, and the bone was shattered upon round the spear. He rolled forward in the sand, and filled up the measure of his fate. For that no mortal may escape, but on every side a wide snare encompasseth us. And so when he thought that he had escaped bitter death from the chiefs, fate entangled him that very night in her toils, while battling with them. And many champions withal were slain. Heracles killed Telecles and Megabrontes, and Acastus slew Sphodris, and Peleus slew Zelus and Gephyrus, swift in war. Telamon of the strong spear slew Basileus, and Idas slew Promaeus, and Clytius Hyacinthus, and the two sons of Tyndareus slew Megalosaces and Phlogius. And after them the son of Aeneas slew bold Itomeneus, and Artasius, leader of men, all of whom the inhabitants still honor with the worship due to heroes. And the rest gave way, and fled in terror, just as doves fly in terror before swift-winged hawks. And with a din they rustled in a body to the gates, and quickly the city was filled with loud cries at the turning of the dolorous fight. But at dawn both sides perceived the fatal and cureless error, and bitter grief seized the Minyan heroes when they saw before them Cyzicus, son of Aeneas, fallen in the midst of dust and blood. And for 3 whole days they lamented and rent their hair, they and the Doliones. Then 3 times round his tomb they paced in armor of bronze, and performed funeral rites and celebrated games, as was meet, upon the meadow plain, where even now rises the mound of his grave, to be seen by men of a later day. Nor was his bride Cleite left behind her dead husband, no, but to crown the ill she wrought an ill yet more awful, when she clasped a noose round her neck. Her death even the nymphs of the grove bewailed, and of all the tears for her that they shed to earth from their eyes, the goddesses made a fountain, which they call Cleite, the illustrious name of that hapless maid. Most terrible came that day from Zeus upon the Doliones, women and men, for no one of them dared even to taste food, nor for a long time, by reason of grief, did they take thought for the toil of the corn mill. But they dragged on their lives, eating their food as it was, untouched by fire. Here, even now, when the Ionians that dwell at Cyzicus pour their yearly libations for the dead, they ever grind the meal for the sacrificial cakes at the common mill. End of part 4.